Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, we're on the air, Lena.
What?
We're on the air. We got in. Good evening. You hear us, we're, I guess we're on the air. We've got some problems here trying to get...
We're on?
Yeah, we got kicked off the air, actually, and then we kept trying to call in and calling back in, and then we kept getting a busy signal. So we apologize for tonight's show.
I guess they were having some systems problems.
Yeah, but unfortunately they didn't get back to me, and I, you know, they were supposed to, I sent help requests and all that stuff. But
maybe they're having trouble with, maybe they have inundated with stuff.
Yeah. You know, I was looking at, this is the second time I've seen this today. See my shirt? You gotta put your magnifying glass.
Oh, yeah.
They're advertising it everywhere in every place.
Uh-huh.
Isn't that interesting? I've got a. If anybody's interested, you can go to. You might have seen it on some shirt somewhere, or some website. But I got a. I created a T-shirt on Zazzle.com. You can go to. You can get it on my. Go to my website. You'll see it. But. But,
okay.
But you'll see it. It's Radical Radio, and there's a pretty model who has a T-shirt, black T-shirt on with my face on top, on the front picture, and and on the back the LA Steel Talk Radio Show, it says Radical Radio. So.
Well, let's read some of those radical things.
Yeah. So anyway. This thing blew me away, so I really got kind of screwed up here. Makes me mad. Let's start with this one. I just noticed it. And we can go to the Times Change. Supreme Court of the United States guts the Voting Rights Act. How's that?
The U.S. Supreme Court, in a 5-4 vote Tuesday, struck down a core provision of the Voting Rights Act that singles out part of the country for special treatment. The outlawed provision, Section 4, identifies all or part of 16 states, mainly in the South. A separate provision, Section 5, not struck down by the Supreme Court, forces them to get permission or preclearance from the U.S. Justice Department or a 3-judge federal panel in Washington to make changes and how people vote in their jurisdictions, no matter how innocuous. But without identifying the parts of the country affected, the preclearance requirement is meaningless. The landmark ruling frees up many parts of the country that have a history of discriminating against minorities from federal supervision. In the majority opinion, Chief Justice John Roberts said the conditions that required Washington supervision no longer apply. Four other conservatives joined him. The court's four liberals dissented. The core provisions of the Voting Rights Act were challenged by Shelby County, Alabama. The covered jurisdictions of the act include Alabama, Alaska, Arizona, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, South Carolina, and Texas. Most of it are Virginia and bits and pieces elsewhere.
All these states, or most of these states, or a lot of these states seem to be conservative as well, Republican-led, as well as notorious for voting rights
violations.
Yeah.
The lower courts ruled for the act, but the U.S. Supreme Court reversed, saying Section 4 is unconstitutional because the purpose of the act no longer reflects conditions in the covered jurisdictions. Our decision in no way affects the permanent nationwide ban on racial discrimination in voting found in Section 2, Roberts said. We issue no holding on Section 5 itself, only on the coverage formula. Congress may draft another formula based on current conditions. Such a formula is an initial prerequisite to a determination that exceptional conditions still exist, justifying such an extraordinary departure from the traditional course of relations between the states and the federal government.
Our country has changed, and while any racial discrimination in voting is too much, Congress must ensure that the legislation it passes to redeem that problem speaks to current conditions. Well, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg dissented, joined by the other three liberals. As she said, in the court's majority view, the very success of Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act demands its dormancy. She said, Congress was of another mind. Recognizing that large progress has been made, Congress determined, based on a voluminous record, that the scourge of discrimination was not yet extirpated. And the question this case prevents is who decides whether, as currently operative, Section 5 remains justifiable, the Supreme Court or Congress. And the 1965 Voting Rights Act was overwhelmingly reenacted by Congress in 2004. So, you know, these goddamn conservative guys, I don't know what's with these guys, you know? They think they can, I don't know. These states are loaded with discrimination, loaded with minority people, and it's, you need these provisions. But yet,
Well, they seem to enjoy shredding the Constitution.
They love to. And these are guys that are supposed to be
upholding
the law.
No. There's a couple of things that David Icke has that I'd like to.
Yeah, me too. This is kind of interesting too. So I thought this was a good one. We got time. We're just going to go over a lot of time. Governments. This is Elder. Government. Bombshell. Government's insider threat programs obligates federal workers to spy on their colleagues. Yeah, imagine that. McClatchy Newspaper Group tells a story that mainstream media ignores. And it says, once again, McClatchy County is doing mainstream media's heavy lifting, exposing the secrets of an increasingly hidden government. In 2003, it was McClatchy alone among the major media groups that questioned the government's certain claim that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. On Thursday, the same reporters involved in the Iraq truth-telling a decade ago exposed the existence of the Obama administration's program that obligates government workers to spy on their colleagues or face punishment, dismissal, and possibly criminal charges. The insider threat programs target not only national security departments and agencies, but also federal bureaucracies from the Peace Corps to the Social Security Administration and the Education and Agricultural Departments. And it's clear that not only does disclosure of classified information constitutes an internal threat, an act of espionage, but leaks to the media as well. Leaking is tantamount to aiding the enemies of the United States, according to a June 1st Department of Defense planning document for the program leaked to McClatchy. The White House launched the insider threat programs in October 2011 as it's still real from the WikiLeaks disclosures of hundreds of thousands of documents thought to have been downloaded from classified networks by Private Bradley Manning the year before. The program is evolving agency to agency in response to the president's broad guidelines. Documents provided by McClatchy's investigation show the varied approaches to the executive mandate. At the DOD, McClatchy reports that policy is zero tolerance. Employees must turn themselves and others in for failing to report breaches. but it is the suspicion of the potential breaches that must be reported, requiring coworkers to monitor colleagues' work and lives. Forget that. Profiling is encouraged. A coworker facing a divorce or financial problems is to be watched carefully, one training memo states, as these are indicators of an inclination toward espionage. And an extensive Army training document offers hundreds of suspicious behaviors that federal workers must report, including working hard and independently, repeatedly performing non-required work outside of normal duty hours, especially if unaccompanied. And the Department of Agriculture, Treason 101, offers an online tutorial in the basics of spying and the inside espionage threat. Want to read some of that?
The two-year-old program is now expected to be re-upped in the wake of Edwin Snowden's explosive revelation of the National Security Agency's telephone and internet data collection program. But according to internal security experts and the former government officials that the McClatchy team interviewed, the insider threat program will have grave consequences for the public's right to know. It could make it easier for the government to inhibit exposure of unclassified information in illegal programs and thwart legitimate whistleblowing. This program will be used to quell different perspectives, which in the end can hurt national security, they fear. Fearfulness and groupthink contributed to the prevailing erroneous CIA judgment that Iraq indeed had weapons of mass destruction, warning invasion. Again, it was the McClatchy group that distinguished itself among mainstream media for questioning the veracity of the claims used to justify the 2003 invasion and occupation. And again, as the government takes aim at its own citizens as internal threats, it is McClatchy among the large newspapers and newspaper groups that keeps the facts coming.
There you go, folks. NSA leak reveals the rising fascism in U.S. politics.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's a lot of good stuff here. You might want to go to this the site Alternet. A lot of interesting articles on there.
Why don't we go to the one on the fascism? I think that might be interesting.
Okay. Where am I here? Where is it?
NSA. There's a new fascism on the rise, and the NSA leak shows us what it looks like. The power of truth tellers like Edward Snowden is that they dispel a whole mythology carefully constructed by the corporate cinema, the corporate academy, and the corporate media. In his book, Propaganda, published in 1928, Edward Bernays wrote, "The conscious and intelligent manipulation of the organized habits and opinions of the masses is an important element in the democratic society. Those who manipulate this unseen mechanism of society constitute an invisible government, which is the ruling power of our country."
The American nephew of Sigmund Freud, Bernays invented the term public relations as a euphemism for state propaganda.
Oh.
Yeah. He warned that an enduring threat to the invisible government was the truth teller and an enlightened public. In 1971, whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg leaked U.S. government files known as the Pentagon Papers, revealing that the invasion of Vietnam was based on systematic lying. 4 years later, Frank Church conducted sensational hearings at the U.S. Senate, one of the last flickers of American democracy. And these laid bare the full extent of the invisible government, the domestic spying, subversion, and warmongering by intelligence and security agents, and the backing they received from big business and the media, both conservative and liberal. Speaking about the National Security Agency, Senator Church said, "I know that the capacity that there is to make tyranny in America, and we must see to it that this agency and all agencies that possess this technology operate within the law so that we never cross over the abyss. That is the abyss from which there is no return.
On 11th of June, following the revelations in The Guardian by NASA contractor Edward Snowden, Daniel Ellsberg wrote that the U.S. had now that abyss. Snowden's revelation that Washington has used Google, Facebook, Apple, and other giants of consumer technology to spy on almost everyone is further evidence of a modern form of fascism. That is the abyss. Having nurtured old-fashioned fascists around the world from Latin America to Africa and Indonesia, the genie has risen at home. Understanding this is as important as understanding the criminal abuse of technology. Fred Braffman, who exposed the secret destruction of tiny Laos by the U.S. Air Force in the 1960s and 70s, provides an answer to those who still wonder how a liberal African-American president, a professor of constitutional law, can command such lawlessness. Under Mr. Obama, he wrote for Alternet, no president has done more to create the infrastructure for a possible future police state. Why? Because Obama, like George Bush, understands that his role is not to indulge those who voted for him, but to expand the most powerful institution in the history of the world, one that is killed, wounded, or made homeless well over 20 million human beings, mostly civilians, since 1962. In the new American cyber power, only the revolving doors of change. The director of Google Ideas, Jared Cohen, was advisor to Condoleezza Rice, the former Secretary of State in the Bush administration, who lied that Saddam Hussein could attack the U.S. with nuclear weapons. Cohen and Google's executive chairman, Eric Schmidt, they met in the ruins of Iraq, have co-authored a book, The New Digital Age, endorsed as visionary by the former CIA director, Michael Hayden, and the war criminals, Henry Kissinger and Tony Blair. The authors make no mention of the PRISM spying program revealed by Edward Snowden that provides and NASA access to all of us who use Google. Control and dominance are the two words that make sense of this. These are exercised by political, economic, and military design of which mass surveillance is an essential part, but also by insinuating propaganda in the public consciousness. This was Edward Bernays' point. His two most successful PR campaigns were convincing America that they should go to war in 1917 and persuading women to smoke in public. Cigarettes were torches of freedom that would hasten women's liberation.
Oh, that's awesome.
They could die from cancer
They did. And in a popular culture, that the fraudulent idea of America as morally superior, a leader of the free world, has been most effective. Yet even during Hollywood's most jingoistic period, there were exceptional films like those of the exile Stanley Kubrick, and adventurous European films would have U.S. distributors. These days, there is no Kubrick, no Strangelove, and the U.S. market is almost closed to foreign films. When I showed my own film, The War on Democracy, to a major liberally minded U.S. distributor, I was handed a laundry list of changes required to ensure the movie is acceptable. His memorable sop to me was, okay, maybe we could drop in Sean Penn as a narrator. Would that satisfy you? Lately, Catherine Bigelow's torture apologizing in Zero Dark Thirty and Alex Gibney's Least Steel Secrets, cinematic hatchet job on Julian Assange, were made with generous backing by Universal Studios, whose parent company until recently was General Electric. GE manufactures weapons, components for fighter aircrafts, and advanced surveillance technology. And the company also has lucrative interests in liberating Iraq.
The power of truth-tellers like Bradley Manning, Julian Assange, and Edward Snowden is that they dispel a whole mythology carefully constructed by the corporate cinema, the corporate academy, and the corporate media. WikiLeaks is especially dangerous because it provides truth-tellers with the means to get the truth out. This was achieved by collateral damage. The cockpit video of a U.S. Apache helicopter allegedly leaked by Bradley Manning. The impact of this one video marked Manning and Assange for state vengeance. Here were U.S. airmen murdering journalists and maiming children in a Baghdad street, clearly enjoying and describing their atrocity as nice. Yet in one vital sense, they did not get away with it. We were witnesses now, and the rest is up to us.
So, John Pillage is a renowned investigative journalist and documentary filmmaker. He's one of only two who have twice won the British Journalism Top Award. His documentaries have won Academy Awards and also UK and US. So, good for him. And, but I don't know. To me, this stuff is really important to get out. We keep trying. Layla and I, God Almighty, we keep trying to bring this stuff out. No, don't we, dear?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, there are a lot of other people trying, too.
And what we do. I mean, I'm not saying that. God, we're reading other people's stuff.
I was just saying
okay,
there are a lot.
Okay, give yourself a pat on the back.
There are a lot of other people, too, doing something,
well,
too.
Well, yes, but they're not enough. I got to say, they're not enough.
Well, there's a new thing happening. David Icke is, and I think with Alex Jones, they're trying to form their own radio TV network. And they do a lot of alternative, bring a lot of alternative news. That should be interesting to see what happens with that.
No, yeah, I mean, this is kind of interesting. I didn't read this yet, but
the topic.
It looks like somebody's finally doing
finally that. Some sanity in Congress about castrating the National Security Agency's total surveillance powers. This is from the alternate as
Vermont Senator Pat Chick-Lahey has introduced a bill that would place restrictions on NSA's ability to collect intelligence on Americans. Both Democrat and Republican Intelligence Committee leaders have fallen over themselves to denounce the NSA's leaker, Edward Snowden. But other members of Congress are using the opportunity of a renewed debate over surveillance to push for restrictions on the NSA's ability to collect intelligence on Americans. Senator Patrick Leahy has announced a bill that would put an earlier end to provisions in the FISA Amendments Act and authorize the Internet Surveillance Program known as PRISM. This bill called the FISA Accountability and Privacy Protection Act would sunset the authorization to June 2015. Just do it now.
Yeah.
You have to wait 2 years.
2 years sooner than the current law. That would force an earlier examination of the law allowing the Internet Surveillance Program that authorized the U.S. government to request user data from technology companies.
I mean, these guys got no balls.
I mean, that's not going to do anything. It'll just disappear in the black hole that the Congress has become.
And the bill is co-sponsored by four state Senate Democrats. Richard Blumenthal, Mark Udo, Ron Wyden, and John Tester, and one Republican, like the Coalition of Democrats. They're about to introduce similar legislation in the House earlier.
I'll believe it.
Yeah. I'll believe it when I see it.
When I actually see it.
It
seems to me it'll just drop into that black hole.
Yeah, it will, too. And that, you know, it's such a joke. Such a farce. So, anyway, let me go to some stuff here that we had scheduled for tonight. In fact, I've got it here. I posted most of it on Facebook, on my Facebook account. So that we have it all in order. So if you will wait 1 second, I will go to it. It's one way I keep all these things and post them at the same time. This one is really exciting to me today. Now, I haven't heard it any other place.
What I heard on the way home was that Snowden is still in Moscow.
No, that's not true.
That's what NPR says,
and what the mainstream media says. But they obviously didn't read the Norway papers, because Private Party Norway, Snowden passed through Norway to Iceland. Okay. The party leader, Jacobsen, would meet with Snowden when he was supposed to land on Sunday evening, according to the party's Twitter account.
We have received information from our international umbrella party, the Pirate Hardee's International that he will stop in Norway. The reason is this is probably the quickest and easiest way to fly to Iceland.
And he says Ororado also said that pirate party in Iceland confirmed Snowden's stay in the country. And Iceland has become a haven for people like him, almost a pirate island. And he said the party leader, Jacobson, on the other hand, thanked the former agent. He has sacrificed his whole life for something he felt wrong. And he has done, what he has done is exemplary. He has sacrificed a life of freedom to inform the public about a serious infringement, said Jacobson to TV2. According to Oslo Gardermoen, airport websites, a flight from Moscow arrived in Oslo at 1925, I don't know, whatever that is, on a Sunday evening. And but the press officer at the airport did not give any information on the details. Also, police at the airport told TV2 that they do not have any information about the case.
Co-chairman of the Norwegian party said to the Nordic paper that they never claimed Edward Snowden landed in Norway, but we were informed that he had booked tickets from Moscow to Iceland via Norway. We did not know whether he would use these tickets or not, but we were present at the airport should he choose to do so. As events played out, nothing indicates that he did come through Norway, and we are as much in the dark about his whereabouts as the rest of the world, he added. Edward Joseph Snowden is a former technical contractor and Central Intelligence Agency employee who worked for Booz Allen Hamilton, a contractor for the National Security Agency, before leaking details of a classified NASA massive surveillance program to the press. Snowden shared classified materials and a variety of top-secret NASA programs, including the interception of U.S. telephone metadata and the PRISM surveillance program, primarily with Glenn Greenwald, the Guardian, which published a series of exposés based on Snowden's disclosures in June 2013. Snowden said the leaks were an effort to inform the public as to that which is done in their name and that which is done against them. Snowden's alleged leaks are said to rank among the most significant breaches in the history of NASA. Matthew M. Aid, an intelligence historian in Washington, said the disclosures linked to Snowden have confirmed long-standing suspicions that NASA surveillance in this country is far more intrusive than we knew. On June 14, 2013, U.S. federal prosecutors filed a sealed complaint made public on June 21st, charging Snowden with the theft of government property, unauthorized communication of national defense information, and willful communication of classified intelligence with an unauthorized person. The latter two allegations are under the Espionage Act. He's a whistleblower.
Yeah. He says
they don't like it.
He says about Pirate Party Norway. I think it's clever.
Norway.
That's party. Pirate Party yet. That's
Norwich. Norwegian for the Pirate Party of Norway is a Norwegian political party which was founded on the 16th of December 2012. The basic principles are full transparency in state management, privacy on the Internet, as well as better use of IT and technology to make a better democracy. On December 17th, 2012, they announced that the 5,000 signatures required to take part in the next general election have been received. The party is part of the Pirate Party International. Good for them.
Okay.
So it doesn't say that he went through Norway yet.
But you know what I think it said here. It did say that, but I think they released that. Okay, because they said he slept there that night. Okay, Pirate Party. But then I think what might have happened. They don't want them knowing this stuff. I mean, they denied it. They deny. Oh, we don't know anything. Everybody in the world looking for this guy. But now, they didn't want to announce that until Snowden either was either there
was,
or was coming there,
or,
but they said
it's new. Keep going. Right there. No, you just missed it. Oh, okay.
That's all I wanted to read about the Norwegian news.
So we don't really know.
Yeah, but it's interesting. And
so maybe
I wanted people to hear this. It's only a few minutes long, but I don't think you've ever heard this either. Credo Matuas,
a Zulu shaman.
Yeah, wrote this on predicted this in 2009 about Obama, and I'd like you to hear this because he's quite famous for his predictions, and this is one that might very well surprise you. This must have a lot of it is already
happened.
Proven, to be true. So listen to this, folks.
goes on. Go to.
Okay, if you haven't gotten this, this, that this is kind of a weird one. It was about this, the agenda of disposable people.
Can you get onto that?
Yeah, I can. But I thought we might go through this one. Oh yeah, Facebook's former security chief now works for NASA. Isn't that great? And this one scared the Jesus out of me. It says full remote control of all modern U.S. market cars proven. So in other words, all cars today, modern cars are can be remote control. Imagine.
Get out of the site.
I can't. Exit out. I can't.
No. It's frozen.
Can't get out of the
site.
You
keep doing that, you're
going to
make it worse.
Can't get out of it. Oh, here we go. Maybe I can pull around it. I solved it, Layla. I'm not sure. I solved it.
How did you finally solve it?
Something that was like a bad plug-in or something that didn't get... No. Oh, there we go. Okay. Okay. Yeah. This is an interesting article by Atlantic Wire. What matter? It says, which of these facts is the NSA lying about? Okay, it's kind of funny. Come on. All right. In an effort to allay concerns about its collection of data on Americans, the National Security Agency released a fact sheet detailing the standards it uses. All well and good, except apparently for the fact that the sheets contain a significant inaccuracy, according to two senators who've asked that it be fixed. So that fact is, so which fact is it? Okay, Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon and Mark Udall of Colorado, two longtime foils of the NSA surveillance activity, including that episode in March when the National Intelligence Director lied to Wyden under oath, wrote a letter to NSA Chief Keith Alexander yesterday afternoon, noting that no doubt in an inadvertent error, it pertains to Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Act, an addition made in 2008, that has been used in the justification for NSA's collection of electronic data on foreign nationals, in some cases Americans. And the letter reads in part, we are disappointed to see that this fact sheet contains an inaccurate statement about how the Section 702 authority has been interpreted by the U.S. government. In our judgment, this inaccuracy is significant, as it portrays protections for American privacy as being significantly stronger than they actually are. All right, we have identified this inaccurate statement in the classified attachment to this letter. It says, you'll note that the senators don't use the words deception or lie. They merely point out a factually inaccurate statement that portrays the NSA in a better light than might be warranted. Classified attachment is not public, of course, but Wyden and Udall provide a copy of the fact sheet, allowing us to consider where the inaccuracy might lie. And it used to be on the NSA website, but it doesn't appear to be it at this point. The cached version of what used to be at the agency's site does differ from the version offered by Wyden. And the facts is that this authority allows only the targeting for foreign intelligence purposes of communications of foreign persons who are located abroad.
The government may not target any U.S. person anywhere in the world under this authority, nor may it target a person outside of the U.S. if its purpose is to acquire information from a particular known person inside the U.S. As part of the Edward Snowden leak, The Guardian published the internal document presented by the Department of Justice to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court describing the government's minimization procedures, the rules under which it minimizes collecting data on Americans, intentionally collecting such information as stated, not allowed. These two points are probably accurate.
It says, under this authority, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court annually reviews certifications jointly submitted by the U.S. Attorney General and Director of National Intelligence.
These certifications define the categories of foreign actors that may be appropriately targeted and, by law, must include specific targeting and minimization procedures adopted by the Attorney General in consultation with the Director of National Intelligence and approved by the court as consistent with the law and Fourth Amendment to the Constitution.
Certification at issue appear to be those referred to above, published by The Guardian last week. We note that they, many times before, that which is the FISA court, has determined that on at least one occasion in the past, the NSA's surveillance has violated the Fourth Amendment. And it says there must be a valid, documented foreign intelligence purpose, such as counterterrorism, for each use of this authority. And all targeting decisions must be documented in advance.
This one is maybe.
The text of the law outlines only that a significant purpose of the acquisition is to obtain foreign intelligence information. See, there's nothing in any of these things that give authority to survey
I didn't like this court anyway.
But there's nothing in there, and the court doesn't give them the right under any of these facts, okay, to tap American citizens,
mm-hmm.
right? Only foreign. And this one may be, okay, the Department of Justice and Office of the Director of National Intelligence conduct on-site reviews targeting minimization and dissemination decisions at least every 60 days. Well, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court must approve the targeting and minimization procedures, which helps ensure the protection of privacy and civil liberties. These procedures require that the acquisition of information is conducted to the greatest extent reasonable, feasible, or minimal, minimize the acquisition of information. Okay? These points, again, deal with the review process, and which seem unlikely to be the points that cause Wyden and Udall such concern. Inaccuracies representing after-the-fact cleanup are far less severe than misrepresentations of the NSA's authority to conduct investigations. And any inadvertently acquired in communications of or concerning a U.S. person must be promptly destroyed if it is neither relevant to the authorized person or evidence of a crime. We know that Udall and Wyden consider that point inaccurate. They say so explicitly in the letter. And it goes on, and there's a whole bunch of more. And I'm going to lead you to that article, refer you to that article. Very, very good. It's by the Atlantic Wire, .com, and it's called "Which of These Facts Is the NSA Lying About?" Right?
Mm.
I think they're lying about all of them. You know, first.
I don't like that court anyway.
No.
I think you should have a warrant before you do any of these things in advance.
Well, they're supposed to have one. By this court, but you know, that's a big joke.
It's all done after the fact.
That's a big joke. You know?
I don't like that.
And, so, I don't know.
That was pushed through, too.
Yeah, said, let's see, I'm trying to find. Oh, this one here, this one really killed me when I read this. Hey, you think you're, even your car can get hacked now? And it can be driven off with the wind. Yeah, it's incredible. Now, you know, Hastings, this is a full remote control of all modern U.S. car, U.S. market
cars proven.
All modern U.S. market cars proven.
Hastings 2013 Mercedes could have instead been hijacked by a remote control, run to full throttle with all driver input disabled, and rammed into a tree.
The team of hackers in the Department of Computer Science at the University of Washington conducted a study which has proven that all cars equipped with anti-lock brakes sold in the U.S. can be hacked by a remote control and have their brakes entirely disabled with the car in motion. Holy crap. I read this, right? It's amazing. So, revved.
Remains fully operational with the key removed and the car in park, with all driver input entirely ignored.
Is that
what happened with those cars that just took off on
people? We don't know. That accelerated, but these things I have no idea.
So I myself think Hastings was murdered.
Yeah, but those were Toyotas.
Beforehand and parked and burned because the initial fire picture showed a car with no front impact damage and a blown up rear end, only to be interspersed with scenes of extreme automotive carnage later. I'm going to introduce here an entirely new possibility that could have happened. The Hastings 2013 Mercedes could have instead been hijacked by a remote control, run full throttle with all driver input disabled, and rammed into a tree.
Many people know about GM's OnStar, which maintains an always-on cellular internet connection to the heart of the engine control system, and has been that way since the 90s. But few people know about the federal mandate, which in 2005 forced manufacturers to include a similar always-on internet connection via the cell network in every car sold in America, an OnStar or not. And this team of hackers has proven that a remote connection can indeed allow commandeering of these cars. In their case, they used a remote control laptop plugged into the OBD port rather than the cell connection that could be used to turn the car into a murder weapon. The issue is that all cars that use network control modules can use the CAN, or Control Area Network, protocol, with functions in a manner similar to a wired computer network, which connects PCs. Each module in the car, be it the ABC controller, throttle controller, spark controller, or even the modern radios, communicate via this network, which also integrates with the main engine control unit. If any one of the devices in this network can be hacked, and the team proved that all can, it can be used as an insertion point through which total vehicle control can be taken away from the driver and a car operated at the whim of a remote attacker. And the federally mandated always on cellular internet connection in all cars since 2005, and later provided a remote access point all through which any car can be hacked, provided you are
high enough in the government
to be privileged with the ability to use this connection. Right? And there is little doubt Hastings Mercedes had a camera in it somewhere. Cameras are super common on high-end cars, which could have allowed an attacker to know exactly where Hastings' car was. I give a visual of their attack and allow them to see what they were doing when they hijacked this car from a comfy drone desk 1,000 miles away and drive it to a perfect crash. I don't personally think this is how they did it, but the capability is definitely there. What if? The CIA favors car accident deaths above all other assassination methods because the deniability factor is so high. And even if all evidence seems to make the driver appear innocent, it's easy to stop such a defense by blaming drugs or alcohol.
I'm sure many readers are tired of people making claims and then producing a lengthy document which only spuriously supports what has been stated in the article. That is not the case with this one. It's all in there. Read it and weep. Your car provided it is new enough, has the potential to be a bona fide word murder weapon via the always-on internet cell connection.
It says here, and there's an original link to the document on this page, and if it mysteriously stops, if that mysteriously stops working, I have uploaded it to my own server here.
Mm.
And you will discover that particular document to not be a waste of time. If whatever you get does not include them taking the car out on an aircraft runway and creating a situation that would have killed the driver, you did not get the real thing. So, in other words, you can go to this page and check out the real thing. And this is on... The Rebel. Yeah, that's I couldn't read the way you wrote it.
I can't read. I
it's
couldn't read
Rebel,
that.
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, the Rebel.
Okay.
All right. So yeah, here is the Rebel. Actually, the Rebel, and it says Rebel of Oz's home page. So it's pretty cool. But yeah.
Here's a good article: The Establishment Protecting Corporations from the Law. The Serious Organized Crime Agency has yet again, that's SOCA, has yet again turned a blind eye to law-breaking, allowing corporations to hack and steal personal information from members of the public and business rivals has emerged. 6 years ago, SOCA became aware that telecom giants, insurance companies, and law firms were engaging in illegal activity by routinely employing private investigators to obtain sensitive data, including the use of telephone interception specialists who would physically attach real-time listening devices to targets' landlines. Corporations have also obtained personal information by calling the NHS councils, customs, banks, and HM revenue and utility providers. This is in England, probably happening here too. Let me see what's that. According to The Independent, Tom Watson, according to The Independent, Tom Watson, Labour MP, said, what is astonishing about this whole murky affair is that SOCA has had knowledge of massive illegal invasions of privacy in the newspaper industry, but also in the supply chain of so-called blue-chip companies. I believe they are sitting on physical evidence that has still not been disclosed fully to forensic investigators at the Metropolitan Police. The law should also be rigorously applied to other sectors that have gotten away with it. I am deeply concerned about these revelations. I'll be seeking an explanation from SOCA as to why this was not told to the committee, blah, 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 blah. So there's all kinds of wiretapping, invasions of privacy. Just amazing. From insurance companies, law firms, banks. Disgraceful.
Hmm.
And so we only have like a couple of minutes. Was
well,
there anything? Yeah.
Yeah,
I think we should end up
next week. Yeah. No, I just got one of my Facebook friends there, Nicole.
What did she
say? She just sent me this. Said she thought I might be interested in this. And these Indians got arrested for performing a
ceremony.
Yeah, last year. July 4th, 2012, U.S. Forest Service law enforcement officers charged Chief Killeen with federal crimes following the coming age ceremony for the future chief. After federal officials announced a full four-day river closure, supposedly to protect participants from harassment by voters, Forest Service agents spent 4 days disrupting the ceremony. As please contact Forest Service Chief Tom Tittle at tittle@fs.fed.us. Urge him to work with the Winneman Wintu tribe to ensure that ceremonies can be held in peace and dignity. amazing.
You think they'd have something better to do than disrupt the coming of age ceremony for?
Yeah, it's probably been happening forever. You know, there.
Yeah.
I play part of it, but it's 20 minutes long, and we're out at the end of our show. But you can go to it actually if you're interested in Indian affairs, American Indian issues. It's on YouTube, and it's called "Ceremony Is Not a Crime." -20 minute version,
mm-hmm.
and you can check that out. But
thank you for your patience.
Thanks,
sorry it took us so long to get on the air. We ran a little over.
And Nicole, if you happen to be listening to the show, I don't know, but I just made a reference to it. So thank you for sending that. And I want to thank everybody. Okay, for.
Nicole.
Yeah. She was on our podcast with George
Dixon.
Yeah.
She
wrote this way back January 22nd. She was friends with George.
Oh, that was very nice of her to send that over. That's an interesting. And I'm sure that Indigenous people are harassed all the time, and they never get any publicity on that. So.
Well, anyway, so that's where we are, folks. I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. We appreciate you. Sorry about the delay, but
thank you for your patience.
For some reason, we were kicked off our network, or I don't know why.
They were having problems.
Yeah, so finally they got around to it, which is great, you know, and
got
us back on, but we lost half an hour. So we wound up,
going a little later. So I hope.
Oh, look at this. Obama administration facing massive federal lawsuit. Lawsuit seeking the return of $43 trillion and an audit of all the TARP programs by an independent receiver has been filed against senior members of Obama administration, the New York group known as the Banksters. Let me read that. That's interesting. Huh?
Yeah.
I love Facebook, and I'll tell you why, because I get some of the most fascinating people that send me this great stuff. And
before we go, we have to let you know about this.
Yeah. So there's a lawsuit seeking the return of $43 trillion to the federal government from all of the banksters. And Wall Street Journal Market Watch is reporting that the Spire Law Group has moved its mass tort action into a federal court in Brooklyn.
In New York.
Yeah, in this district court lawsuit. The Spire Law Group is acting on the behalf of homeowners across the country seeking to halt all foreclosures nationwide until the return of the $43 trillion. Wow. The independent audit the lawsuit is seeking of the TARP program stems from the report by the former Inspector General of the Bailout Program, Neil Barofsky, who is countering the claim made by President Obama, both publicly and privately to Congress, that the money has been paid back. Mr. Barofsky asserts that none of the money advanced by the Treasury has ever been paid back by the recipients of the program. Plaintiffs have established the location of the $43 trillion of the laundered money in a criminal racketeering enterprise participated in by the following individuals: Eric Holder, Tony West, Camilla Harris, John Corzine, Robert Rubin, former Secretary of Treasury, Timothy Geithner, Treasury Secretary, Vikram Bandit, I don't know what that is, Valerie Jarrett, Anita Dunn, Robert Boris.
The lawsuit alleges that the Obama administration actively borrowed money from these banksters to fund his political campaign in 2012 election and has not pursued any criminal charges against them. The lawsuit also claims multiple violations of the United States Patriot Act, along with the policy of embargo against Iran and countries hostile to the foreign policy of the United States, and the Racketeer Influence and Corrupt Organizations Act and other state and federal laws by the Obama administration.
Whoa. That's something, huh?
Well, I hope they go through with this.
Wow.
So anyway, folks, that's it. That's the end of our show, and that's kind of a real downer note to end on, but let's see what happens.
I want to thank Ralph Watson, who sends me a lot of great information.
Good article.
Yeah, thanks, Ralph, for sending that to me via Facebook, and unbelievable.
All right, so we should play our music?
Move that along, and sure.
So right, thanks very much for being with
everybody.
Us. And be with us tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Good night, folks.